Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents.
Madam Speaker. Madam Vice President.
You want to hang out with us? Get your vaccine. Vaccine.
And so I went to Human Resources.
There are some things I just can't tell you on air.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
A woman's problem, if you will.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Sup Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. Welcome back to the country, Sammy. Welcome back to me. We haven't done like a real panel episode for a couple of weeks. It feels like a real back to school moment this week.
It does. But don't worry. I've been listening to every single episode.
Really?
Yeah. Like I had a lot of spare time on vacation. So I listened to every single episode because there was so much happening and I didn't feel like I was able to like really connect to it. And I also didn't want to feel like it was really like depressing me. Like, and I know it's like so douchey to be like, I was depressed on my vacation because of like, you know, all this stuff, but yeah. Like, it was really upsetting. I just needed a place to like hear about it with, you know, a little bit of a lighter tone, despite how horrible everything is. And alas, the Betches Sup is the place.
Oh, we love it.
I went.
That is our lane. That is our lane. I truly can't believe that Texas went ahead and banned abortion while you and Elise were on their honeymoons. I cannot believe it.
It's frankly rude. For many reasons.
It's so rude. It's so rude. So we haven't discussed like straight up governing for a few weeks. There hasn't been too much going on.
They haven't really been governing.
That's true. They haven't really been governing. The governing that's going on is governing we're not in favor of. So we'll put into focus what's going on in national politics today. But for most of today's show, we're going to discuss some women and their bullshit. But first, we're going to talk about a man and his bullshit. Today, it is not Ron DeSantis or Greg Abbott. They're taking the day off from this podcast. We're going to talk about there's only one left, Mr. Joe Manchin.
Honestly, like it's really.
Did you miss Joe Manchin, Sammy?
Honestly, okay. When I was gone, it really hit me with full force. Like we are in control of the whole government, minus the Supreme Court, clearly. And we still can't have done nothing. Like it's. Like, I'm actually just so baffled that, like, we have done nothing and there's nothing that anyone can do to get Joe Manchin to change his mind. Like, if the Republicans were in this position, they would never be in this position because they would just solve it.
They would never be in this position. Not at all. So what are we talking about? What is Joe Manchin up to now? Same shit as always, but we are hurtling towards the end of 2021, which is wild. Which means we're entering a hugely important legislative session ahead of 2022. This is important because I feel like I hear a lot that you can't really make huge decisions or moves when you're in an election year or you're close to midterm elections. I realized that I just sort of hear that conventional wisdom and I'm like, sure, fine. We have a deadline. I know why. How could I expect my government to do anything for me when there's an election in 9 months? So before I want to actually like challenge that wisdom. Is that accurate? Where did that come from?
Forget that.
I don't know where that came from. Like, I don't know where that. I just want to point out it's the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Like, just sit and do the math on that. That is not just a presidential year. It turned out to be the biggest presidential year, the biggest presidential win for the party that actually, the president that actually got it forced through in modern American history. Like, so this notion that you can't do things in election years, like that's something
to realize why you brought that up. You were just like, well, think about the Civil Rights Act of 1964. I was like, sure, I guess we can do that. Okay, because it was 1964.
It was 1964. Yeah. We can't do
notably an election year.
You know, they were passing like constitutional amendments too. I really think like people have for like all that we get from modern politicians is excuses for why they cannot do things, which is hilarious to me because I started reading about the legislative history of like the Civil War amendments. And like, when you stop and think about it, it's like, oh yeah, when was the last time we passed an amendment? And it's like, oh, 50 years ago. Like, it's not that long ago. There are people living memory. Joe Biden was an adult when we last passed the constitutional amendment. People are making it out to be like, oh man, we haven't changed the constitution in and like, it's not true. It's happened just recently. There are lots of people alive who remember passing a constitutional amendment, but somehow none of our modern politicians, oh, we can't do anything because in 2 years, there'll be an election. Like, yes, that's what happens every 2 years.
Also, like, I understand maybe if we were in the year of the election, but we're like right. Not even 9 months since he was.
I feel like since early summer,
he was inaugurated.
Clock is ticking.
Like, I get it, but he hasn't even been like, if a baby was conceived on his inauguration, it might not be born yet. It wouldn't be born yet.
Well, there's there's a lot of stuff where it's like, I want my politicians to work harder than me. I don't want them to always be on vacation.
They work way less hard than you.
Sure. When I get to Wednesday afternoon, do I enter into Friday energy? Sure. But my job is not governing the nation. I do not want my government in Friday energy on a Wednesday. I want them in. No, I don't really want them in Wednesday energy. I want them to have Tuesday energy all year long, all term long.
They should have Monday fucking morning after January. They should have January 2nd energy all the time.
January 7th energy is where I want people to be. Yeah.
Good point. Good point. So what is
war? We're at what war. Is, whatever.
So what specifically is getting jammed up now? It is this huge multi-trillion dollar package that will solve some problems. I've been calling this the BFD because it is a big fucking deal, literally. And they said on Pod Save America, and I believe this strongly too, that like we should not be going around just saying that it's $3 trillion. Let's keep that part to line two if it seems to impact people. One of those people that it's impacting though, of course, is Senator Joe Manchin. He would love to stay around $1 to $1.5 trillion. I'll remind you that Bernie Sanders originally proposed this as a $6 trillion deal. So good on him for keeping, you know, starting from there so that we had a lot of room. The Biden administration and Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, to be clear, they have been saying we want to go for $3.5 trillion.
Why are we still acting like any of this money is real? Like it's
I know, not
real. Like why are we playing games? Like none of this is real.
It's also it's being called $3.5 trillion because it's a total spending package, but the package is set up over 10 years.
Years.
It's $350 billion a year. So if you stop and think about that, that sounds stupid. It's like, oh, two Jeff Bezoses a year. Like that's not
exactly.
That's not anything, you guys. The United States federal government spent more on just like buckles on military gear than anything that we're spending right. In this bill. Like people need to stop.
Right. And right. This, we just want to bring us slightly closer to not being like one of the only countries in the world that does not offer any paid or mandated leave. So it's expected that Joe Manchin will come up to 2 trillion, but that would require $1.5 trillion in cuts, which is a lot of the stuff in this bill. I mean, we addressed this at the beginning, but it's like this one dude has made it impossible to get any big signature items done. And I don't know what to do about it. So like 9 months in, what's our report card for this Democratic Senate? And is it like Joe Manchin is just, if it's Joe Manchin weren't in the group project, they would have an A. It's a C. Okay, explain.
Okay, the reason it's a C and not an F is because of the stimulus.
Mm-hmm.
And because they did like, they honestly, like if we weren't for anti-vaxxers and like anti-maskers and disinformation rampant on Facebook, I do believe the pandemic would be quote over. So mm-hmm. I do think they did everything they could in that realm, but all the, which is important, obviously, but all the other realms are just an F. So yeah.
That's Caitlin.
Reasoning.
I'm gonna agree with Sammy here. I'm gonna go with a C for the fact that for the basic competence on stuff that like really needed to get done. Like there was some emergency stuff, particularly again around the pandemic, that had to be done. Like it literally, there was no other choice. Like it had to be passed or else we would have just collapsed. So I give them credit for staving off collapse. At the same time, like it's a very short window of thinking that comes out of the Senate, comes out of Chuck Schumer, comes out of like, no one's thinking past like, we got a compress on the bullet wound. Now we will do nothing. It's like, it still destroyed the internal organs. Like we got, people are taking horse dewormer. Like what, you guys, we gotta do something to think about where we're going to be. And then of course, voting rights. The fact that we've been in a stalemate over whether or not Democrats are ever going, they're like, oh, it's going to be a midterm election. I'm like, with redistricting that's going to be run by Republican state houses, with the election laws that have been passed in Texas and wherever, and with a Supreme Court that is gutted voting rights before they had a supermajority. Now, they'll be lucky. You could legitimately be like, don't want person to vote because they a Negro. And they would straight up be like, I don't see how that's racist. I'm pretty sure that that's not even a term anyone uses anymore. So technically not racist. And you're like, that's what's going to be like forever. So the lack of movement on that and Joe Manchin holding up things on that and climate change. So very obviously being the situation right now, no minimum wage increase. Which we've seen now is the consequence of that is that no one wants to go back to work for good reason, because if you have to risk your life for $7.25 an hour.
Pre-tax.
That's gross. That's your gross take home.
As opposed to having to pay somebody more than that to,
I mean, counting tip minutes,
to watch your kids. Like, of course they're not going back. And I don't know if we've mentioned this on the podcast, but obviously also this week unemployment ended for, I think 11 million people are losing some kind of, and you know, the reactions to this, even among progressives are, you know, I had a lot of people sort of respond to like Instagram stories I was posting about this saying like, I don't want to ask the wrong question, but I don't understand why they still need unemployment. But for exactly what you just said, I mean, if you have people to care for and your job isn't even going to pay you enough to pay for that, and you don't have resources, maybe one of the 650,000 people that died was your mom or your dad or your aunt or your uncle who provided care. Like there are plenty of reasons. And even in the states that have, some states over the summer, like they could have kept it going, but they decided to end it early to try to prompt some new employment, and they did not see the results that they were hoping for.
Also, like, people need unemployment not because they need like unemployment specifically. It's that people need anything, any sort of assistance on any metric of anything. Like, like people need childcare. Okay. So if you could get universal childcare, then maybe people could go back to work. People need like the universal basic income. Like there's, if people didn't have to pay for their healthcare, maybe they wouldn't need unemployment. Like give someone something, like do something to stimulate the economy, to create, I don't even want to say like some sense of fairness, because they clearly don't give a fuck about fairness, but like do anything to create any sort of stimulus so that you could get the consumer economy that the United States economy is back to like maybe an acceptable place. But like they don't care because they have like a yacht. So, and like there's no problem paying for the yacht. So,
yeah. And the money is like, the money exists in this country. It is in circulation. Like we can just tax people the money that they don't need and that they could never spend, that is just sitting in their accounts, to pay for these things, which you said, Sammy, would result in fewer people needing unemployment and us having to have all these conversations trying to explain why You know, trying to fight these bad faith arguments. Like, why are people refusing to go back to work? It's like, I don't think somebody would have the same. I mean, the reason people are refusing to go back to work, refusing, is because they literally can't. But if we were to pass this $3.5 trillion bill, implement these things over 10 years, maybe we'd have a situation where people have a little bit more protection when crises happen. And we wouldn't constantly be having to have this unemployment debate. Unemployment, are these lazy people that won't go back to work? It's like, we're all entitled to a couple $100 a month if we have a kid. So it doesn't matter whether you're working or not. We all get it, whether we're working or not.
Also, they don't even need to like necessarily raise the taxes on these people. They could start with collecting them. Start with merely getting the taxes that are presently owed. So if you just invest in like the IRS itself into like going after not just like the random person who accidentally like doesn't pay some amount, like a small inconsequential amount of money, like $1,000, like stop chasing down $1,000. Get like high level forensic accountants, the people who are checking out Erica James' expenses, and go there, get money and hire those people, and then recover some of the tax money that you're already owed. And you don't even, no one even has to hear about it.
There were even some Senate Republicans who didn't want to do that.
Yeah. I also point out that wage theft is the largest amount, like raw money, that is stolen every year. Like that is the largest amount, but it outdoes larceny. Like you could combine everything else and just wage theft outdoes all of it. Okay. No right. matter what you were stealing, you could go like steal a Picasso. I swear to God, it's still going to be worth less than the amount of wages that is stolen out of people's paychecks. So that's number mm-hmm. one. Number two is 28% of tax evasion is at of our tax base, like something over $100 billion annually is avoided by the top 1%. That's just that avoidance. So like that's the second point. It's like there's tons of money being left on the table. And then finally, you know, work. Like it takes a lot of energy and skill to do work. You've got a lot of intellectual workers who are talking about burnout. A lot of people who are further up on the income scale. We are talking about how we cannot keep ourselves above water right now. And yet there's absolutely zero respect for the amount of work that actually has to be done to keep us, even our basic standard of living, for the people further up. The people who are doing that work have even less. And are basically, people want that. It's just like, it's straight up an economy where that labor is seen as meaningless, even as we know it is literally the only thing between us and Armageddon as far as having a society. And there's no respect for it and there's no investment in it. And it's like, why should anybody go back to doing that? You know, I was doing retail. And that's not even essential, but they worked stuff out so that they could keep things open. You know, like if that's going to be your mentality, then not respecting the work that's being done and the value that's being created and investing it back into people, like why do you think anyone's going to put up with that forever? And why should they?
Mm-hmm. I know. I'm just thinking about the people that like work those like low paying jobs. They've had to wear masks this entire time. And then like, what, you live in New York City, at the end of the day, you got to get home in a subway that's flooded with water. It's like I feel like I've seen this a lot on the internet and we say this on the show a lot, but it's like real, real end times vibes, real end times energy this week, huh? Yeah. We're getting aggressive nods. Yeah.
The past 2 weeks, I mean, honestly, I feel like it was because I was off from the morning announcements. Like, am I the only thing?
They were off? Like, Sammy's not watching the news, so we can go apeshit.
Right. It's like when my therapist says, like, what do you think you're going to miss if you don't watch the news? Like, I could tell you exactly well. What I'm
gonna It's like, therapist, actually, you're like, wrong.
Wow. Actually, when I turned off the news, they started allowing human citizens to place bounties on each other.
Oh my God. The subway flooded. The whole city flooded.
The Taliban took the entire country of Afghanistan.
It like didn't even take us 2 weeks. Like we were there for 20 years and it, yeah. 2 weeks later, they wrecked everything. It was like we were never there.
New York and New Jersey and Louisiana flooded. Tahoe was on fire.
Like, oh my God. I can't even keep track. There was an episode we recorded a few weeks ago that we published on Labor Day. And Elise and I were both talking about, like, well, you know, since it's been a slow news, August is supposed to be slow. It has not been slow. I mean, I haven't even been thinking.
Because legislatively, it's slow because they're on vacation. But I think we've now seen that things don't just stop because Congress is in Hawaii. Like,
also, don't go to Hawaii. The end.
Yeah.
You're not, they don't want you there.
Hawaii is asking you to reconsider going there.
Cancel the White Lotus reservations.
Yeah. So speaking of wild shit that is happening, not in Congress, we'll do a couple Texas abortion follow-ups. I wish that there were more follow-ups. Every day I'm like, so you still can't? There have been some legal interventions, very specific, very patchwork, which is what Texas wanted, and it's getting what it's wanted. But a number of other states are now tossing their MAGA red hats into the ring to have the most restrictive abortion laws in the land. First up, enter Governor Kristi Noem of South Dakota. I think my least favorite governor, and I know that's a big claim, but I think DeSantis, I hate her more.
Abbott?
I know. I think she's like nastier. I don't know. I expect more from women too. And she's a nasty woman.
I'm going to go with DeSantis, but only because he was
hard to
this close to being Andrew Gillum. And frankly, his scandal would have been a significant improvement over all of Ron DeSantis's.
True. That's accurate. So Governor Kristi Noem, she's definitely going to run in 2024. I think she's putting her hat in the ring. She's on all of the polls. She famously has had like no COVID restrictions, very minimal, which some say probably led to a huge outbreak because she let that motorcycle rally come. And I can't wait. Maybe there's already some study out there about
Sturgis motorcycle.
Rally. Never forget the Sturgis motorcycle rally. So now what she's doing is she basically was, after this Texas thing, she promised that South Dakota would have the most pro-life laws in the land. So she called for a statewide review of existing laws, then went ahead and banned the prescription of medication abortion via telemedicine. Her order mandates that abortion medication can be prescribed or dispensed only after an in-person examination by a doctor licensed in South Dakota. It also bans abortion medication from being provided via courier, delivery, telemedicine, or mail service, as well as on state grounds or in schools. South Dakota doesn't have, it's a pretty rural state. I mean, a lot of its clinics are far apart. I believe it is considered an abortion desert. Want to note here that telemedicine abortion is safe. And we finally have lots of data to show us that. Before the pandemic, the FDA had required in-person distribution for one of the pills involved in medication abortion. The Gynecologist Association has long said that this is not necessary for like more than a decade now, has said evidence-based medicine shows that's not necessary. So this was temporarily suspended finally in July of last year, but just because of the pandemic. So this was quickly endorsed and it started happening, which finally gave scholars and academics an opportunity to study the safety. And a study released a few weeks ago from the University of California, San Francisco, showed that telemedicine abortions showed an efficacy rate similar to in-person provision, suggesting that abortion provided via telehealth is feasible and safe. Last week, Chris Millie and I, we talked about medication abortion. We talked about it in the context of like, some people have different preferences for how they want to end a pregnancy. And the most important thing is choice. So a lot of people would rather not do it that way. Still, that is sometimes their only option, especially for a lot of these women that are impacted in Texas or places with abortion deserts. So this seems to be something that Republicans are picking up on. And with Governor Kristi Noem's recent move, it really looks like the GOP could view medication abortion as something they could really easily manipulate for political gain. I wouldn't be surprised if we see more of these. And it's really something the FDA should have addressed, you know, years and years and years ago. But it's just so gross to me. And that's why we had this discussion last week, that you would rob somebody of the option they prefer for their medical procedure. Because of no medical reason. Like, think of any other thing that would happen. Like, would you rather us do it this way or this way at your dentist? And you say this way, and they say, no, they're equally as safe, but no, you can only do it this way. It's like hard to comprehend.
For them, it's just about like maximizing restriction, and abortion by mail sounds very,
exactly.
You know, it's like sounds bad on a TV commercial. And yeah, I mean, it's just that the bat, like, think about how ridiculous, they don't really care about like the logic of the law. Like they really only care about just like making one and then hoping that the Supreme Court eventually overturns Roe.
True.
Yeah, there's, people are going to get upset about the hypocrisy here or like the actual tangible effects. And it's important to, you know, emphasize that they don't care. Like they don't care about what this is going to do to people. That is the intent. The intent is to basically, you know, Republicans are frustratingly very aware of how power is structured. They know that it's very hard to directly like push a button and get people to do what you want them to do. But you can create systems that very clearly disincentivize behavior or very clearly reward certain behavior. And this is, you know, a 50-year-old eugenics project that they're obsessed with to force women, particularly white women, to give birth against their will, regardless of what they want. And the point of all of this is to force abortion into a place where it's not really a meaningful choice for people. And they have to stay pregnant. And that limits women's autonomy and people with uteruses' autonomy in very serious ways. And we all know that. Like, if not, that's why birth control exists. Like, they're coming for that next. You know, it's Griswold v. Connecticut that they're going to go after right after Roe, which is like the right not to get pregnant in the first place. They're going to. So all of this is designed to basically terrorize people with uteruses.
Right. And another thing I think people don't even realize is that like all this has implications for like IVF. Like, you're not going to be able to create embryos and then just let them sit. Like, they're not cool with that. That's a human. It has rights.
Right. And then they're going to hold IVF clinics responsible if something happens to those embryos or they're discarded in a way they don't like. And then IVF clinics will be like, well, fuck that. We can't operate. So yeah. I mean, when that seems to come into play, people get really animated. But then I've just been thinking a lot about when Amy Coney Barrett was appointed, and there was a lot of like, she's a respectable jurist. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. Like she's going to make like, no, she was a zealot. And we saw that Chief Justice John Roberts said this was wrong for them to do. Like, I'm just so mad at all the people at that time that like,
people are so tried to fucking make it sound dumb. Like, people are just so fucking dumb. Like they'll just believe anything. It's like, just cause I don't understand. Like, is it that they are incredibly trusting? Like, what the fuck is it that anyone thought that would be okay? Like, she was an extremist. Like,
it was not fake news that she is referred to as a handmaid. That was an accurate headline.
The biggest problem for me is that not only was not enough made of it at the time that she's being confirmed, but then people treat it like all of this was designed to get us to stop seeing her as illegitimate, to treat her appointment. She was that event to nominate her, like RBG was not even in the ground yet. Like she hadn't been buried. She hadn't had her in the rotunda before Amy Coney Barrett was nominated. That's such a grotesque thing to do. And to
people voted
them before the election. And that's so, so disgusting. Like it was so close. And you very obviously have popular sovereignty sitting right there being like, actually, we might want someone else to nominate a space for that judge. The majority did not want her on the court, but it didn't matter. And now we're all being kind of told, well, you know, that's just the way things are now. And it's like, why was that? We didn't even get an option to talk about this. You guys just did it over our heads. And now we're supposed to treat her like she's the same as anybody who's appointed to the court through normal means.
There's just so much rot that it's hard to make people understand. Like, well, these are the things. This is how they are. You can't just change them. No, this was a miss. Things got messed up along the way. It's rotten. We have to end the filibuster, pack the courts to fix. Like that is the way to bring things back to not being rotten.
We all dread the what should we have for dinner question. I know I do. I love a home-cooked meal, but I don't always have the time, energy, or groceries to make it happen. Being able to feast on a delicious meal without the long prep and cook times is what drew me to Home Chef over the other guys. Home Chef's meals are effortless, so I can spend less time trying to be top chef and more time watching it. Whether you prefer classic meal kits with pre-portioned ingredients and easy instructions, speedy recipes ready in less than 30 minutes, oven-ready kits with pre-chopped ingredients, or quick microwave meals that assemble in minutes, Home Chef has you covered for delicious meals without the hassle. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. Home Chef has over 30 options a week and serves a variety of dietary needs, so you never have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. For a limited time, Home Chef is offering our listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your first box. Go to homechef.com/feverdream. That's homechef.com/feverdream for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard that right. homechef.com/feverdream. Must be an active subscriber to receive free dessert.
Okay, so now let's move on to a slightly different topic. I'm so excited to talk about this. We're going to talk about Elizabeth Holmes, girl boss herself. So how much Elizabeth Holmes Theranos content have we all respectively consumed?
I haven't done a bunch. I haven't
really
done
that's surprising.
I mean, honestly, I feel like I know what's up and like nothing's happened yet.
I mainlined every bit of Elizabeth Holmes content from, I read the entirety of Bad Blood and I watched both of the Theranos documentaries. I love how tacky everything about this is. It's just so perfect.
Delicious.
It's delicious.
Yeah, it's great. The only thing I didn't do is the podcast, because I feel like the podcast is based on the book and I read John Kerry's book. Obviously he wrote everything in the Wall Street Journal, but she is on trial this week. So if you don't know about this, Elizabeth Holmes founded a company devoted to testing tiny samples of blood in a little high-tech box. The blood testing company, she started at 19. Theranos was at one point valued at $9 billion after raising $700 million. So looking values, wild. But this little high-tech box was a complete flop. It never worked, and the technology was never even close to delivering on its promise. But still, Holmes and some of her colleagues misled and defrauded investors and even let Walgreens like build clinics to test blood. There are so many details in all the content that Caitlin and I just discussed about the ways that they tried to hide what was going on. It's really quite a thrill. So Holmes and her one-time business partner and romantic partner, Ramesh Balwani, who goes by Sunny, they were indicted with 12 counts of wire fraud, a conspiracy to commit wire fraud. So federal charges. The trial is going to last 13 weeks and potentially feature as witnesses high-profile ex-board members and investors such as former Secretary of State Henry Kissinger, media mogul Rupert Murdoch, James Mattis is a witness. And for her part, Holmes is, she's now married to a hotel heir and gave birth to a son just a month ago. As much as I am not on her side, ooh, kind of sounds rough to be on trial for fraud when you have a one-month-old.
Yeah,
could have thought about that.
Living her life, like after this, I think that's like the most boss move I've ever seen. Where she's just like, yeah, I'm just gonna continue doing whatever the fuck I was doing before. I just committed like this completely atrocious fraud. I want to toss out there too. She probably is responsible for at least one suicide that she basically pressured one of her subordinates into. Because he was dying of cancer. So he had to make a choice over whether or not he was going to live out the rest of his days being destroyed by Elizabeth Holmes, or whether or not he was going to take his own life. And he chose, obviously, to do that, which is very unfortunate. But like, he was under extreme pressure from her because she was loco in the coco.
Yeah, she knew what was going on, which is important, because a lot of the defense is going to say she didn't know what was going on. So the prosecution has to prove that Holmes knew she was misleading investors about the product's potential and success. Her defense is going to claim that the product simply failed, as many do, and there was nothing nefarious going on. One of her attorneys said, quote, trying your hardest in coming up short is not a crime. They'll also claim that exaggeration is just how Silicon Valley is, and she was just participating in the type of persuasion that is effective to investors. She had no knowledge that the product itself was not working. They're also saying that Balwani emotionally and mentally abused Elizabeth Holmes and that the abuse negated her ability to intentionally deceive investors. She might herself testify about this, and Balwani's lawyers have denied that accusation in a filing. If Holmes testifies, she's not really set up for success. In a securities, in an SEC commission deposition in 2017, she responded to questions by saying, "I don't know," at least 600 times. And that is noteworthy because now if she does offer real answers while she's on the stand, it hurts her credibility if she says something different than before. It was reportedly pretty hard to find jury members who hadn't engaged in one of the many content streams about this. And her trial was totally swamped with spectators yesterday, including notably a group of a young blonde woman dressed head to toe in black. I have come across a weird corner of TikTok where people explain why they love her, but if convicted, she faces 20 years in prison. But why is this story so kind of delicious? What do we like about it?
Caitlin, I feel like you said it in our chat earlier.
More women crime lords. I mean,
and to be clear, we don't want more crime lords, but we want more of the crime lords to be women.
No, we
gender
don't
parity
want more
crime in crime lording.
We want the sector to become gender balanced.
Got it. Important distinction. I mean, Caitlin, you listen to everything. Do you buy it at all that she really thought this little box was going to be a success? No,
I mean, she was 19 years old. One of the things that one of the things that impresses me is that she very clearly knew how to manipulate people and like what they wanted to hear and what Silicon Valley like wanted to do. And she particularly weaponized her femininity as a way of keeping everybody from asking any questions. Like you look at that board and it's overwhelmingly like old white dudes who were very clearly like just enamored with her brilliance. And she's obviously really smart, which is why it's so impressive. She pulled this all off. Like you can't pull off. She's no ordinary, you know, girl bossing,
yeah,
MLM kind of situation. She's a whole nother level of fraud. You had to be a genius to pull this thing off because no one looked closely at anything that she was doing. People who were medical, like, were all kept out of it. So if she could continue to lie to people who didn't know what she was talking about and could believe that it was possible.
Right. I think there's a certain type of personality that just like, it's like a Trump personality. Like they're such a force in and of themselves that like they're able to perpetuate something like this. Like Billy McFarland has it. And it's like, basically they just like with the force of their person are able, like a combination of like delusion and like a questionable sense of ethics and just entitlement leads them to believe that like, and I do believe like 20% of Elizabeth Holmes' brain believed maybe I can do it, but like, I don't think she was forthcoming about the reality. Like she obviously was not forthcoming about the reality of the situation.
And she was cosplaying a Silicon Valley founder. So it wasn't just like, oh, I'm just going to, all I want to do is make this discovery and that's all I really care about. She was definitely like, she had such a strong affect.
Yes.
But yeah, I think you're right, Sammy. I think it's like, there are people like that, that are just so, so confident that the only rational basis for their confidence is that they are entitled to that confidence, that they have the goods to back it up. So it's sort of disarming. So it's like, it doesn't occur to you to question it. See, that's the thing. It's like, I think a lot that I would be doing better in life if I had a little bit of that verve in me, because yeah, I have I got none.
I actually do think it like to have like a small amount of it is like
useful,
helpful, but like you have to know at what point you are crossing like the boundaries of like what's ethical and honest. Like, yes, it's true. Silicon Valley is run on a lot of bullshit. Projections of your revenue are inherently bullshit. Like just it is. Like, you might say that, but like, and based on like this assumption, but like your assumption might fail. There might be a fucking pandemic. Who the hell knows? But like, she obviously like took it to another level.
Yeah, totally. Right. And my next question was, like you were saying, what she did was impressive. It is rewarding. It is gratifying to see a lot of these older white men who are used to being rewarded have this happen to them. And sometimes I wonder, had she done this with a company that did not mislead people about their health and did not fuck with people's blood and their medical history, if it were something that didn't have the potential to hurt people or mislead people like that, if she would have even more sort of a mythology and like stand-up around her.
I think she'd be in business still.
Yeah.
That's the real right. truth. Like, what is Mark Zuckerberg yeah. doing that she's not doing right now? Blah, blah,
blah. Right, like the WeWork guy. Like, WeWork he probably has a career if he wants it.
His savior for like almost $1 billion. So because he's owed that money. Wow. That one, I also love the WeWork scandal because I worked for one of their office sharing rivals. And it was just, to me, it's just like beautiful, delicious schadenfreude, like all yeah. the time. But like, yeah, that's all. These scammers, they've been scamming. They would continue to scam people. Like it's exactly what Sammy said. Like, you got that Trump energy. Is he anywhere? He's still out here. So
yeah.
She I know it's pretty too. Crazy that she's standing trial, that Elizabeth Holmes is standing trial when you think of all the people that are like what she did was objectively bad. And they were crimes, but it's just sort of like, oh, it's news to me we're enforcing those. And it is interesting that the time we choose to enforce them is when it's this woman. I am most curious to see. I hope she testifies so we can hear what her voice sounds like.
Oh yeah, that's actually really interesting. Well, okay. You know what I think? I think Elizabeth Holmes is just like a Silicon Valley intellectual, less glam version of like Jen Shah. Like it's like there's plenty of these characters out there. They're just like,
right. That's why. Yeah. Right.
And people think about Jen Shah and Erica. Appearance. Yeah. Like people are so fooled by the appearance. Like, yeah, people are fucking idiots. Like,
I mean, that's the thing about Jen Shah and Erica from Housewives is that what they did, their scams really hurt people, really, really hurt people, really, really hurt vulnerable people.
I just think like Holmes is just so fascinating because like, again, she's just going through her life, just doing like this. You get the sense that like fairness was like a thing she did. And then she's like, well, now I want to go do different things. Like she doesn't act in any way like the remorselessness. And the sense of like it just being just the thing that she tried and
right, didn't work. Remorseless.
Yeah. And it's like, girl, that's not what this was. This was
you got Walgreens to like build a bunch of machines. Exactly. Yeah. I am very curious to watch this, and we will keep you guys posted on any intriguing details. If she testifies, what comes out of that, notably, and what her voice sounds like. That is our show. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Sammy Sage.
I'm Caitlin Bird.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales-Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.